Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you've missed any of my talk radio breakfast show, don't worry. We've put some of the punchiest bits of this morning's show into a bite-sized podcast, the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. Enjoy.
Soon.
Talk radio. Julia Hartley Brewer at breakfast on Talk Radio.
Good morning to you. This is Talk Radio Breakfast with me, Julia Hartley Brewer. Thank you very much indeed for your company. Bobby Freeman's still with me. We'll get his thoughts on my next interview in just a few moments. First up, though, let's talk to the Business Secretary, Alok Sharma. Good morning to you.
Morning, Julia.
Good morning. Well, we're going to have to talk a little bit about a confusion over new rules and what we're going to hear today. But obviously, there's obviously other aspects of government still going on other than the pandemic. And that, of course, is the announcement today of greener homes, jobs and cheaper bills. That's what the government's promising us. It's part of the biggest upgrade of the nation's buildings in a generation. So how much money is being spent? What's it going on? And how is it going to improve our lives?
Well, thank you for that introduction, Julia. So we're talking about £3 billion, £2 billion of it on a green homes grant for individual households, £1 billion going on greening public buildings, schools, hospitals, and the like. And what people are able to do in terms of households, and we actually think around 600,000 households will be able to benefit from this, is to go on to the green homes grant website, which is on our gov.uk page, and you can have a look and see what measures you want in terms of improving the energy efficiency of your homes. The government will fund up to two-thirds of up to £10,000 in terms of the measures. There are both primary measures and secondary measures. So the primary measures are insulation in your roof, insulation in your walls, underfloor, and then, of course, there's a range of secondary measures as well. And as you said, the key point about this is that as a result of this policy, we're able to achieve three things. One is support tens of thousands of green jobs. Secondly, making sure that we are protecting the environment and getting emissions down. You know, we've got our target of net zero by 2050, and this will help. And thirdly, this is really important for people, is that it'll help their back pocket. So we think that if you put the measures in place, you could save up to £600 a year as a result of this energy efficiency.
OK. Do you think that at a time when we are losing goodness knows how many jobs, possibly 3 million of the 3 million currently on furlough could be out on their ear? One in four bars, pubs, restaurants has been forced to close. Many people really concerned that they're not, well, they're not going to see a likely of a pay rise or anything. People are going to be unable to pay their mortgages and pay their rents. Do you think most people right now really care about greening up their home?
Well, I think they do, actually. As I said, this is a grant that is being given to you by the government. And in fact, if you're on low income, you get up to £10,000. 100% of that comes from government. And ultimately, by putting these measures in, you do indeed save further money because of your bills going down. And as I said, we think up to £600 could be saved a year, depending on what measures you put in. And ultimately, you know, you talked about jobs, Julia. This is about supporting jobs, tens of thousands of jobs. So as a supporting local jobs, people who are plumbers, electricians, people who are installers. I've had a discussion with the sector. They're really up for this. And in fact, the amount of interest that we've had in this from the public has also been strong. So I hope people will take advantage, get onto that website, get your voucher, get the work done as soon as possible.
OK. I mean, do you think that people running, for instance, these pubs, clubs and restaurants and bars, all of which are either just having to shut up shop completely or losing, you know, so much business that, frankly, they're not going to last very longer. Do you think they should get sort of help for things like, you know, paying their bills, paying their staff, keeping themselves open, rather than help for making them rather more environmentally sound? And is the government going to offer them any help, given that we've got that 10 p.m. curfew in now?
Yeah, so Julia, I mean, you're right. Look, there are many businesses that are facing a difficult time and challenging time right now. You talked about the hospitality sector. You will know that the furlough scheme continues to operate until the end of October. We then have the job support scheme. In terms of that particular sector, we have made grants available to individual businesses. We've also ensured that actually they don't have to pay any business rates for a year. There are other measures that they can take advantage of. So we are supporting those sectors. I know it's difficult. And going to this point about the 10 p.m. curfew, it's part of a range of measures that we've introduced in the last few days. And it is all about bearing down on this infection. It's all about making sure that we're keeping people safe. And if we protect the health of our nation, we also ultimately protect the health of our economy. Nobody, Julia, wants to go back to where we were in March, which is a national lockdown.
Don't we? It seems the polling seems to show an awful lot of people have been scared so witless they do want to go back to a national lockdown. Now, you know as well as I do, I've got to ask you about Boris Johnson, his confusion over the rules yesterday in terms of rules in England. Of course, we know a lot of those are very different from Northern Ireland, Scotland and Wales. And we know rule of six and everything. And 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. closing of pubs and who you can meet up with, different households, etc., etc. Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, the man who's brought in rules, he didn't know that the rules were different in northeast England. He didn't know what those different rules were. He's apologised since, saying he was misspeaking. If someone is fined for breaking the rules in this country, should they be able to be let off that fine on the basis they didn't understand the rules?
Well, look, I mean, so firstly, in terms of local restrictions that are in place, there are 13 million people across England who are currently in varying levels of restrictions. And obviously, they are different. And that's based on infection rates. That's based on discussions with local leaders as well in terms of what makes sense. And in that case, people should go onto that gov.uk website or indeed the website of their local authority and see in black and white for themselves precisely what the rules are that relate to them and how they can keep themselves and others safe. And as I said, in terms of the national position, it's pretty clear, rule of six, indoors and outdoors.
OK. It is pretty clear, except rule of six, indoors, outdoors. But of course, different whether it's Scotland or in other parts of the constituent parts of the UK, whether or not children or babies count at all. There is an issue, though, over people not knowing the rules, simply because the rules come into force without there being any publicity. Various rules came into force earlier this week that had not been even announced, not even mentioned by anyone in government. They just came into force, having been signed off a few hours earlier, including rules about landlords not paying loud music and not allowing people to dance in their establishments. The £4,000 fine if you recklessly leave self-isolation, or if you fine if you describe someone, you say someone else as should be self-isolating and they're not. Do you think that this is a way to make laws that could lead to huge fines for people, and presumably imprisonment if they don't fine, a rule that would allow a COVID marshal with no training whatsoever from their local council to use, in quotes, reasonable force, unquote, to enforce those laws? Is this a way to make laws in a free and democratic country without any parliamentary oversight and anyone being told in advance that those rules are coming into force?
Yes, I mean, look.
Yes, your answer is yes. That is the way to make laws.
Julius, if I may, the issue with this is that in terms of having to make those rules, sometimes they have to be put in place very quickly because we want to get infection rates under control in particular areas. Now, it is absolutely the case that those rules will lapse if they are not enacted and voted on in Parliament within 28 days. So there is a level of scrutiny there. I completely accept it is effectively after the event. But it is also the case, and you see this every day. I mean, you have ministers like me coming on every day being quizzed absolutely right and proper. You see almost every day a minister standing up at the dispatch box talking about a particular policy that we're introducing when it comes to coronavirus.
But they didn't mention any of those policies I just mentioned. They didn't even mention those in advance.
Yeah. So for people to be able to question them. Now, the issue is, which some parliamentarians have raised, is whether or not there is a way of engagement with parliamentarians before rules are brought in. I know that's something that is being looked at. We're discussing. I don't want to preempt anything on your programme. You'll appreciate that. But that discussion is ongoing. We've also made sure that the scientific advisors are so important in all of this are also available for regular briefings with MPs. And you know, a lot of MPs have also asked for, you know, what are the stats in terms of my constituency? We're making that available as well. So we want to make sure that we are serving a parliament, we're serving MPs. But I know people will also understand that sometimes we have to act very fast, and that's because we want to keep people safe.
OK. Hospital admissions have gone down four consecutive days in a row, and they've gone down quicker than it would be likely that they could be affected by the rule of six and other rules that are brought in, that you say have to be brought in quickly. Why then are we ramping up the restrictions on people's lives when we are not seeing the exponential growth that we were told we would be seeing? The graph that Chris Whitty and Valance showed a week and a half ago, we are not coming anywhere close to the sort of growth of doubling every day that they were talking about. There is no doubt at all we are not seeing the sort of growth we saw back in March. Why do we need those sorts of measures then?
Well, so, I mean, that of course is good news, and the reason is because people are showing a greater look common sense. You've also seen the infection rates numbers that have gone up. But you know, we know a lot more about this virus now.
They're not growing. They're not going up exponentially.
Well, there are therapeutic treatments as well which are available. So there is a whole range of things that we can do to assist people who are infected without having to have them hospitalised. But at the end of the day, this is all about making sure that you know, we can return to some level of normality. Nobody wants, Julie, I can absolutely guarantee you that nobody wants us in government to move back to what we had in March. That's really would be very, very bad news for all of us. And that's why we look to people's good judgment, look to their common sense. Mm-hmm. Please observe the rules, follow them, and that is how we keep each other safe.
Sorry, but Alex Chalmers, you're echoing what the Prime Minister said repeatedly. We need to look to people's common sense and their good judgment. But we're not being allowed to exercise common sense. So, for instance, I can only meet up with five other people. I can't meet up with six, even if it's outdoors. That would be exercising common sense. You're not allowing me or any of my listeners to exercise their own common sense about how to keep themselves and their loved ones safe. You're doing the exact opposite of that.
Well, I think what we're setting is a framework for people to follow, and actually...
No, sir. It's not a framework. These are laws.
Julia, the reason that we are where we are now and the economy is largely open, we're seeing a little bit of a recovery, consumer confidence starting to return, the reason is because people did respond over the last few months to the rules and the guidelines that we put in place. Businesses made their businesses COVID secure. We saw the same in the hospitality sector. That's why, and that's what I'm talking about, that sort of common sense, following the guidelines, following the rules. If people do that, we will get through this. We will come out the other side. But we can only do that if people observe the rules.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
On DAB and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Did you use the word smart? So you said you went to Delaware State, but you forgot the name of your college. You didn't go to Delaware State. You graduated either the lowest or almost the lowest in your class. Don't ever use the word smart with me.
Unedifying, I think, is the fair summary of that, isn't it? Well, let's talk to two guests about this. Scott Lucas, Professor of International Politics at the University of Birmingham, and Greg Swenson, who's from Republicans Overseas. Scott, I'll give you first dibs on this. The debate, I mean, the whole thing was just unedifying on every possible basis. But did Joe Biden do enough to overcome that whole sort of sleepy Joe tag that that Donald Trump has given him?
I think he may have won it by disqualification, Julia, if it's a boxing match. He definitely doesn't win by a knockout, because I think Donald Trump was very much there to disrupt any flow that Biden could get. And I don't think he even wins it on points, because, as you mentioned, quite a lot of the debate was just fractious and ugly. But I think he wins it for two reasons. I think the first is there were moments when he could speak to camera, not to Donald Trump. And I think the key moments are when he talked about healthcare, when he talked about coronavirus, and when he made this speech about the need for equality and decency in approaching social and racial issues. Donald Trump, who was setting out just to attack, didn't have any of those moments. And I think instead, the headlines that Trump is getting today, and I know some of it's from the center-left press, but it's about his supposed endorsement of white supremacist marches. Second reason why I think Biden wins by disqualification is because it doesn't move the needle very much. And right now, he's the candidate who's ahead in the polls, including in the swing states that Donald Trump needs to win.
Yeah.
It was Trump that really needed to swing people last night.
And he certainly came out fighting. There's no doubt at all. Greg Swenson from Republicans Overseas UK. Donald Trump, I've never seen him so sort of pumped up. I mean, he was his usual boorish and bullying self, very high energy, very, very much coming out fighting. But again, when the commentators criticise this and say, oh, it's all unpresidential and awful, well, he did this last time round in 2016, and he won.
Yeah, that's true. And remember, you know, Vice President Biden, he's been around a long time. He's a pro at being a politician. He's had 38 debates in his long political career, and did quite well. You know, people gave him a hard time for not doing well in the early primaries this time around, but he did quite well against Bernie. He held his own against Bernie Sanders, who's a very good debater. Mm-hmm. In the last Democratic debate. And remember 2012, he was a real bully with Paul Ryan. You know, Paul Ryan, recall, you know, running for vice president, is a real policy wonk. He's kind of a policy nerd in a way. And Biden just sort of picked on him. And so I wasn't surprised to see Vice President Biden come out swinging. And they both made fools of themselves, in my opinion. And I thought, you know, that was to be expected. I thought it was, you know, I wasn't surprised to see both guys take the gloves off. And I, Scott and I were talking earlier, and I think, you know, we both can agree, not something we do often, but we can agree that there's not a lot of persuadables in this race.
No, and that's the key thing, isn't it? Coming back to you, Scott, is that, you know, there are people who hate and despise Donald Trump, and there are people who hate and despise Joe Biden. And, you know, you've got your two big, you know, sets of voters. This is actually not what, you know, people who already know their views think, because they're just going to view things as, you know, it's going to confirm all of their views and prejudices all the way along. This is about the swing voters and where they are. Do you think that Joe Biden did enough to stave off, you know, the concerns that he's early stage dementia, that he's too old for the job, that he is, you know, the fact that he was, for instance, the discussions about Antifa, that a lot of people very concerned about, you know, protests on the streets after Black Lives Matter and the like, that actually did he do enough to appeal to those, you know, middle income, middle American voters who, in the end of the day, will decide the election?
Well, I think, first of all, I think you can sweep away the disinformation. I mean, you can sweep away the disinformation that Joe Biden, veteran politician, is not mentally capable. You can sweep away the idea that Donald Trump isn't capable of standing on a stage because he took a cognitive test a couple months ago. Instead, when you talk about that 30% in between the camps that have made up their mind, what swings them? And I don't think it's mudslinging and insults. At the end of the day, it's going to be, are they safer because of coronavirus still threatening America? Do they have better economic prospects after the American economy has taken a hit? Do they feel safer in terms of issues, for example, their social position, housing, education, and healthcare? And the problem with Trump is, to pick up Greg's point, in 2016, when you're in opposition, you can attack. You have that luxury. When you've been president for 3.5 years, you've got to give voters some sense of security.
Yeah, let's talk just finally to Greg Swenson about the tax issue. That was one of the big issues that was discussed yesterday. And Donald Trump was sort of hit back at Joe Biden saying, hey, you know, you don't have the tax code I use. You can use the tax code. There is very much a mixed message from Donald Trump. And as often, lots of things he says aren't true. But he says he paid millions of dollars in tax, but he won't release his tax records. And he also says he uses the tax codes to avoid tax. So it's a bit confusing. But how much do you think these tax revelations have damaged the president?
Very little. Look, I don't think he messages perfectly. You know, he didn't deliver that.
That's a euphemism.
No, that's an understatement, right? But really, it doesn't matter. First of all, he's just doing what every especially wealthy real estate developer Americans do, is they use the tax code to their advantage. They take losses in some years. They offset gains in other years. That's completely kosher. The problem is Americans don't care about Donald Trump's taxes or how much money he made. They don't care about Joe Biden setting up a subchapter S corp to take advantage of a tax loophole. He and Jill made $13 million. Good for him from, you know, speaking tours and book engagements. They care about their own income and their own taxes.
That's what's going to matter at the end of the day. We'll have to leave it there. Really appreciate you, gentlemen, joining us. Scott Lucas and Greg Swenson, thank you very much indeed. 7:44 is the time. Just a quick word to Bobby Friedman on all of that. These are the men who actually stayed up and watched the full debate. I mean, I've got it, you know, on tape to watch in full when I get back home. I'm sort of wondering whether it's worth bothering. It just sounds like it was horrific, doesn't it?
I think you better go back to bed instead, Julia. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, obviously, you have these are members of Republicans abroad and Democrats abroad. They have a stake in this. And neither of them really was very positive about either of their candidates. And it just gives a sense, doesn't it?
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Let's get the thoughts now on all of this and how it affects those in school and those in university with Robert Halfand, Chair of the Education Select Committee and Conservative MP for Harlow. Good morning to you, Robert.
Good morning. Hello.
If I asked you a bunch of these quiz questions, how confident would you be of getting the answers right, Robert?
Well, I'm appalling at quizzes, so I never, ever do them. But so I probably do very badly. And people go on about being 1984. Sometimes I think we're in a Carry On film. I'm just waiting for Sid James to turn up, sort of Carry On coronavirus, because it is such almost like a British farce.
I think a lot of people are feeling that way. And because I like you, not part of political, but because I like you, I'm not going to ask you the quiz questions, because you've always been very good to us and you've always given us very straight answers. And I think that's one of the reasons why my listeners like us to have you on. But let's talk about where we are in terms of university students, first of all, because that is a very big issue for an awful lot of people. We were reassured by the Education Secretary, Gavin Williamson, yesterday that university students will be allowed home at Christmas. Again, I mean, if I had my daughter at university right now, I mean, you know, good luck standing between me and getting my daughter home for Christmas. I mean, I would pity the COVID marshals having to handle that one. But they would have to self-isolate for 2 weeks first. Is it tenable for university students to be at college, mixing as they will do, even if they don't get a proper freshers week or not, and stopping the spread of the virus?
Well, I definitely think we need an updated letter and statement from the chief medical officer and the chief science officer as to the health issues and the risks in terms of students at universities. I prefer that students go back to university just as I preferred pupils to go back to schools, but the key thing to all this is if there is a proper testing regime, and there isn't yet. You've got some universities who can afford it, who are paying to test the students on a regular basis, and others who are just going through the national system. Of course, we know there are problems with that, and you might have less lockdowns in halls of residence if there was much more widespread testing and tracing at university.
I mean, should we even be concerned about young people getting infected? I mean, should the argument really be, look, we know that people coming from all parts of the country who are young people are going to be, you know, getting, you know, goodness, I was snogging each other, hugging each other, dancing each other, whatever they're going to be doing, they're going to be passing it on to each other. In which case, we know that's going to happen. Shouldn't the aim have been to actually make sure that they just didn't come into contact with anyone who's likely to be in contact with vulnerable and elderly people? And so actually effectively sort of quarantining them on their campuses where possible, or at least in, you know, the student bars rather than bars in the cities where they are have campuses effectively in major cities. Would that not have been a more realistic prospect than the idea of having a whole load of students turning up and then having to self-isolate in the halls of residence?
Yeah, if that's possible. But obviously, so lots of students live in houses in the towns and cities where the universities are. And stopping students going to bars in the town or to restaurants or shopping or whatever it may be is incredibly difficult. You can't police a whole university campus. We're talking about the thousands and thousands of students at different universities. I think this is why the testing regime has got to be much better. The health advice needs to be improved, and the blended learning needs to be there. And it needs to be a plan B, that students get proper blended learning. I'd also like to see them get a discount if they're not getting proper learning, face-to-face lectures with tutors or lecturers. They should be getting some kind of discount on their university fees.
I think a lot of people would feel that way. Exactly, those fees are $9,000 plus. You're often paying, you know, something like half that towards their accommodation as well, leaving university with $50,000 worth of debts, but not really getting much to show for it. Not even the fun, let alone the face-to-face lessons. Let's talk about what's happening in schools then, because you and I spent most of the summer discussing, I think, on a twice weekly basis, what was happening in schools. My daughter, along with everybody else, has gone back to school. It all went very well for a bit, and then what a surprise, kids started getting coughs and colds, everyone started getting COVID tests, and kids got started getting sent home. I mean, half my daughter's year is now at home, the entire year below is now at home, and that's just, I think, quite average and quite normal, certainly for the people we know who've got kids at school. Are we going to continue through this through the whole of winter? We're just effectively going to be sending hundreds and hundreds of children at each school home every few weeks because someone coughs?
Well, this is why we need a proper testing regime. There are just 10 kits per school. The testing needs to be much wider. It needs to be very quick. If there is a problem in a school, whether it's a pupil or a teacher, they should be able to get a test within 24 hours and a result soon after that. Unfortunately, they've also had problems with the getting through to the local Public Health England advice. Now there's a special Department for Education helpline, which is improving things. But it all comes down to testing. The second thing is, if kids are sent home, I don't want to see a situation where we have millions of kids doing nothing at home. What should be happening is that there is a plan B with proper guaranteed online learning, with guidance from the Department for Education, working with Ofsted, who need to come out of hibernation and actually work with the schools to make sure that they're being taught if they're sent home.
Yeah, I mean, again, we had that throughout the summer. It doesn't appear that the youngsters have been able to make up any of the time that they lost over the last 6 months. Do you think that in terms of where we are right now, that the government is providing a proportionate response to the threat of the virus in terms of the rules that we are facing? We know that the Prime Minister is going to be making a statement in a press conference tonight. Chris Whitty and Valance next to him. Last time he made a statement, the three of them, the three big hitters, we ended up having that rule of six across England. Of course, it's completely different in different parts, constituent parts of the UK. Lots of people are fearing we're going to get more developments, or warnings of more developments. Do you think that the government's response right now, and bearing in mind we've got, 18 million of the population living under stricter restrictions in the rule of six, is it proportionate to the actual threat of the virus at this current time?
Well, I hope so. I'm not a scientist or a medical officer. I don't see that we have much alternative than to listen to these people. I just hope to God that they are right, and that they also balance the needs of the economy of schools.
Hold on a minute. That's not their job. It's not the job of Chris Whitty or Patrick Vallance or anyone on Sage to balance the needs of the economy or futurelessness. Their job is to sort of have minimised the number of people who die from COVID. But we know that the more people you try and stop from dying from COVID, you seem to have more people dying from cancer. We've got a million women who didn't get their breast cancer screening this year because that we're not carrying out any of those sort of tests. We know people are dying of cancer, dying of heart disease and the like. We know kids aren't getting their education. We know people are going to lose their jobs. There are going to be suicides. We know all of this. Do you think that we should be making policy like this on the basis of hoping to God the scientists have got it right?
Well, I hope that the scientists and the politicians have got the balance right. I believe that we have to follow the guidance they set out, because I don't know what the alternative is. I'm not qualified to know what the alternative is. The politicians are walking a tightrope between the needs of the economy and the needs of keeping people healthy, in essence, avoiding destitution and avoiding death. And it's a very difficult tightrope to walk. I mean, I think at the moment, of course, there are restrictions in certain areas, but I don't think it's such a terrible deal. Places closing at 10 p.m.
Unless you're the person whose livelihood relies on the pub staying open or the restaurant having more than one sitting in an evening and your job's going to go, then it does matter. One in four pubs, bars and restaurants in this country have closed down.
Sadly, we were having pubs closed down before the coronavirus every week. Hopefully, this will be for a short time. If it does reduce the R rate of the coronavirus, then we can go back to having...
But hold on a minute. But this is the whole point. So, OK, we close down. We go back into some version of lockdown. We're limiting our lives. And then we reduce the R rate. And then we come back out again. And then the R rate goes back up again. And then we close back down again. How many businesses do we really think are going to survive that? You say you're not qualified to know what the alternatives are. You are. You're as qualified as me and everyone listening right now, because these aren't decisions about science so much as decisions about our balance of beliefs and values and our belief in liberty, in the right to have a good life and not just necessarily a longer life, and our ability to make our own decisions about our own lives. We are all qualified to make that decision.
We are, but I think it's a tightrope between, as I say, destitution of the economy and... trying to avoid deaths and ill health. And I think, sadly, until we get a vaccine that works, we're going to have this kind of helter-skelter where there will be some lightening of restrictions and then there might be some restrictions imposed again. I can't see... The only other option is just a complete free-for-all, and that is a huge risk.
That's that there isn't. I mean, we can just continue with social distancing and hand sanitizing and the like.
But that is still potentially a free for all because people will be everywhere will be open. People will be mixing. The social distancing we know that is harder to maintain when everything is open. I think the restrictions they have at the moment, apart from the areas in lockdown, which I appreciate is very tough, but I think the restrictions at the moment are sort of in a middle way, and we just have to see whether they work or not.
Across the UK, online, on DAB and on your smart speaker, Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and give me a good review. And don't forget to catch me on the Talk Radio Breakfast Show every weekday from 6:30 until 10.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.